Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Left Doors Podcast. Derek Kramer,
Frank Arcuri,
and Kyle Powell.
And we're coming at you, as always, every Monday and Thursday on your on-demand audio on WGR550.com. And we, too, saw Tiger win. So here we go. Let's just rip this Band-Aid off. Let's go. Tiger, playoffs, Tiger. Some NFL draft with Jeff Lloyd. Let's just go with the Tiger.
Am I the only one not surprised by Tiger winning?
You might be.
Because everyone's talking like it's the greatest redemption story almost of all time, or it's up there, and it's fantastic. He hadn't won a major in 11 years. He hadn't won a tournament. He won the tour championship last year, but that was his first win on tour in 5 years. It is incredible. It's an incredible story. It's, to me, it's not the greatest redemption story. It's not a redemption story because we should have seen it coming. He had a great 2018, especially in the second half. Last year at the Masters, I believe he was around 40th place, something right around there. He missed the cut at the U.S. Open. But then the Open Championship, he was right in contention on the final day. I think he finished tied for third or tied for fourth, losing out to Molinari, who won. And then at the PGA Championship, he came in second. And then he capped off a great second half by winning the Tour Championship, which is the final tournament of the PGA Tour season. So then heading into this year, my thought process with Tiger was, can he continue what he did and get over that hump of being so close to winning a major to winning a major? And what do you know? He did on the very first major of the year.
You know, you do make an interesting point, though, about this. This was the unquestioned, undisputed best golfer.
This is the best golfer ever.
Ever. Like, it's not like he couldn't win another one.
Yeah.
Especially with how he had been playing recently.
He just...
Brooks Koepka had to hold him off last year.
Yep.
And
at the PGA,
The PGA. And that would have been hype as well. But it's one of those things, though, where, he's been playing kind of on that level again. So now comes the newest intrigue in all of this. The record conversation can be had again.
Yes.
Yes, it could.
He is now three away from tying.
But my thing is here, now that he's finally won one for the first time in what, 11 years.
Yeah.
Now that he's won one for the first time in 11 years, are people going to be as excited here until the countdown gets down to maybe two or one? Like, the next one's probably not going to be as hyped.
Oh, it'll,
of a victory.
Oh, it'll still be hyped because that's just the aura that Tiger has. It's the Tiger effect is a thing for a reason, because he brings the casual fans into golf. He's the reason that a lot of people who you go and see on the golf course and be like, yeah, I've just started playing like last year. And then, you know, we're talking like in the early 2000s and early to mid 2000s, where you get people who say, yeah, I just started playing like last year, and they're like 30 years old. It's because they were watching Tiger on TV. And it's being like, man, that guy is really good. I might want to start trying the sport out. And what do you know? That's what they do. Tiger has inspired a lot of the golfers that are on tour today. Guys like Brooks Koepka, like Dustin Johnson, like Jordan Spieth. A lot of the more American golfers, at least. Because they watched him play when they were younger. And they got inspired by it. So there's always, when the next major comes around, which is the PGA Championship in May, it's going to be hyped because everyone's going to be there to watch Tiger. Even before he won the Masters, when Tiger's there, everyone goes to watch Tiger. It doesn't even have to be the major, just because that's what he brings to the game. He's that polarizing of an athlete, of a golfer.
Yeah, it's, again, I'm not sure about this being a redemption story or anything of the sort there. It's just the guy finally got back to his game.
Yeah.
And part of the reason he lost it wasn't the greatest of circumstances.
It's multiple. I mean, yes, the infidelity stuff and then DUIs and everything as well.
Yeah, so.
But it was, I mean, you could also attribute most of him not being at his game to it's because of his injuries he's had.
Yeah.
The knee surgeries after winning the U.S. Open. He won the U.S. His last major before the Masters, he won with a torn ACL and a broken leg.
Yep.
And he had multiple back surgeries that pretty much almost kept him out of golf for almost 2 years. Yeah, no one thought that he would ever get close to what his game was, but we saw that last summer. We saw that he looks like the Tiger of old. And it was just a matter of time when he just had to get over that hump where he gets the lead and then doesn't look back. And what do you know? We saw it on Sunday.
What would you define this as if it wasn't a redemption story then?
Someone getting back to business.
I call it a great comeback story. As I said, like we should have seen it coming, but it's still a great comeback story in its own right because of what Tiger had been through the previous 2 to 3 years.
I would just say it's one of the best getting back to business. Something that we saw last year looked like it was kind of going to be inevitable that he was going to take a major title.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe I'm one of those people that it just...
I think it's a combo of both.
Maybe it's just I wasn't locked in on it. Once I knew that he was one stroke off the lead, I'm like, it's happening here. Like, I don't even need to worry about this.
Like, it obviously still took Molinari to really mess up. Two double bogeys on the back nine. That's going to really, kill you.
To really mess up, but after two rounds, the man was one stroke back anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like he really had to mess up.
He was there all week.
Yeah, it's not like he had to really mess up to give it to Tiger. No, Tiger also took it by continuing to play well.
Yeah.
So this was just one of those things where after the second round, I'm like, I don't need to be glued to this. I'll get the updates on my phone. because there's just this sense that it's happening.
But
when he's on the
sense.
Final, when he's on the final, final group in the final round, come on.
That sense, though.
This is where it kind of writes itself.
But that sense, though, is what gets people to watch it.
Yes, I'm just saying. For me, though, it wasn't
for you. Yes,
it wasn't heavily appointed because I had the feeling at this point it's like, all right, it's gonna happen. I'm gonna turn on some hockey and watch the Penguins fail because that's something I didn't see coming. And then after that, I'm gonna watch the freaking Lightning fail. You want to talk about things you don't see coming?
That.
Tiger getting into the final group on the final round, you knew something was happening.
Yeah.
And there's people like, I can't believe it. Dude, do you not watch sport?
Yeah, everyone...
Do you not do the thing where we sit there and eat terrible food while professional athletes that look so much better than us do the things so much better than us?
Yeah, everyone that's all like, I can't believe he did it. It's like, okay, like I said, you should have
Don't be so dramatic.
You shouldn't see it coming. However, it's still just as epic.
It's still awesome, yes.
And it's still something you want to be able to see.
But at the same time, you don't have to go ahead and be like, this is the greatest story of all the ages.
Yeah,
no, it's not.
It's just... It's really awesome.
It's just that he's back.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the greatest story in the world. All that said, like, it's just, you know, again, it's good for Tiger Woods. It's good for golf.
It's great for golf.
And that's the biggest thing about it is that it's good for golf. Tiger Woods already has everything pretty much in the world. I'm pretty sure that, you know, adding more majors is not, you know, going to change anything about his life. What it is good for, though, is that golf gets its top draw back. And he was back last year at the end.
Yeah.
So it honestly, it's because of that, though, that everyone kind of, like, it was easier to gravitate.
That's what made going into the Masters this year really interesting because of Tiger looked really good at the end of last year. Is he able to carry that over to this year? The answer is easily, yeah, he's Tiger Woods. If he's playing like the old Tiger, he's gonna be there. But it was, and as I said earlier, it was just a matter of he had to get over the hump that he set back in his younger days. He had to get over that hump. If he was able to do it, look out, golf world, because Tiger's roaring again.
Like, I get it. I kind of sound like a jerk in all of this. But
you also say that too, to be fair. You're not a golf fan. You don't care for the sport that much. Like,
it's not appointment television for me, no.
Yeah.
A big deal like this obviously needs to be paid attention to.
Yes.
And that's why I'm actually saying things about it. But my big thing here also does have to do with we've seen cooler redemption stories. Let's not put the wrong word into this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like what?
I think the word redemption is not what you need here.
No, I just mean like stories.
I would go with things like, you know, Phil Kessel battles cancer to get back into hockey. Mario Lemieux. Like things where, you know, it was life-threatening kind of thing. And then they're back.
Yeah, but redemption to
the
me
Humboldt
at least
Broncos,
sounds like...
The Humboldt Broncos is redemption story. Building a team back from literal ashes and death. And remembering half the team that died to try to heal again. And those families will obviously have something that they cannot get back.
See, I can't...
But
I can't combat with that. But redemption to me is like a fall from grace, not tragedy.
Yeah.
Redemption is I have failed and I am here and I have got back on top of this mountain.
Well, that's
for reasons
that
I had control of and I failed.
I'm going with comeback.
Yeah, I go comeback more for
Tiger. I'll call it a comeback.
He had that kind of redemption back in 2013. It was because it was after all of the infidelity stuff. He came back. He was in golf in 2013. And at one point that year, he was back to being the world's number one. He won a couple tournaments. He didn't win any majors, obviously, but he won a couple tournaments. He was world's number one. But then he got – then it was the injuries that derailed him for the next couple years after that, where – and now it's, oh, he's back again. So I think comeback – I think comeback story is more closer to what this is for Tiger, more than redemption. I think going
maybe
from
I'm using redemption wrong here too.
Maybe that you do a lot of things wrong.
Thanks, Frank.
I mean, I would say maybe Tiger 2013 when he won a couple tournaments then is closer to a redemption because it was it more ties in with everything that happened back in 2009.
Okay, so the comeback on the course is fine, but I think he redeemed himself in the public eye a lot. This past week, too.
Did he ever have to?
I think so.
Not really. Everyone loves Tiger.
Do they?
Do they not? Why do you watch golf?
I don't watch golf.
You watch for Tiger. Like, that's what happens. Like,
yeah, but what is the reason you're watching Tiger for is what
see,
I'm
that's,
asking
that's,
for. There's
see,
people that watch for the wrong reasons.
See, that's where I think 2013 ties more into redemption because it was so close to that. Whereas now it's been 10 years since that happened.
Watch out of
spite. People have already kind of moved on from it.
Yeah. It's something that happens where...
Especially because between around... You know, 2015 to 2017, he kept leaving because of injuries and everything, having multiple back surgeries.
Yep.
Around that time, people were thinking, okay, he's done. He's never gonna be the same Tiger again. Even if he comes back,
that's a fall from grace. So then you're defining redemption.
No, the fall from grace is that Thanksgiving Day where he crashes into a friggin' tree.
Yeah, because you can't help the injuries.
That's a fall from grace.
You can't help that. You can't help those things.
It started there.
Some form of the trio of us are fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah.
Right now. And I think we.
The problem
is
we don't know who.
We just need to break out the Webster. That's all we need.
We might have to break out the Webster.
We have different definitions.
We have different definitions and different meanings and different perspectives, and that's kind of what makes this. A weird discussion.
The bottom line is, good for Tiger, wherever you fall in the spectrum, and it was really cool, I think, for a lot of his fans.
It's a great.
This is the first championship he's had in the Twitter era.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
Whole new level.
Yes, that is that is a very true thing. I mean, we kind of got to experience it in the Twitter sphere when he was creeping on Koepka.
Sure.
At the PGA.
Yeah, last year with the Open Championship.
Yeah, we kind of had something there.
There was a tease.
Yes, but we knew the wave was coming.
Yeah,
because we got that excitement, and that's why I mockingly said golf is best when Tiger is threatening but doesn't make it to the top. And I said that mockingly because the hype is there and all the following and everything like that. And now, well. There might be some people that watched it just for that, to see if he actually would do it and actually would get back and he would actually win a major title. Like I said that mockingly, but there are people like that that probably just watched for that chase. Now that he won again, some people might not. I doubt that, but some might. So... It just, for me, it's good for golf, first and foremost.
Yep.
They've got their most exciting player back to peak form, and now the question is, can he keep it going?
Yeah.
Because then if you can have a conversation about the record, a legitimate conversation about it, well, then you're looking at a really different conversation. You're looking at a whole new level of hype.
Like hype beast.
Like I said, I may not necessarily be thinking the right things here. Or maybe I'm mixing certain words up. But for me, my perspective in all of this is, Frank, you have a really great damn point. How did we not see this coming? And that's where a large part of my thought comes from here on this, is the reaction to Frank saying that. It's, you know what? You're right. This dude was the best golfer, undisputed. 10 years ago, you couldn't touch the man. No, well, more than 10 years ago.
Especially too, when I was talking about 2013, when he won, his first tournament win, it was since the U.S. Open, was, I believe it was the Arnold Palmer Invitational,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, even though it was 4 years since everything came out about his personal life, everyone still cheered him. Everyone, he's still the ratings draw, just because that's just who he is. So it's because you didn't really see much of Tiger getting the irk from the public eye, because he was still doing his thing that he makes a living doing, which is why I don't really consider it as much of a redemption story. I think in 2013 there was a bit of redeeming for Tiger. But from last year heading into this year is more of a comeback. He is back.
And the Masters cemented it.
Yes.
We got a tease of it.
He teased it last year. He showed that he can get over the hump by winning the Tour Championship
Then he disappointed in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
But which American didn't?
Yeah. And then it's, can he do it in a, now it this year became, can he get over the major hump? And he did.
Then there was the fun match play with Phil.
Which was okay, yeah. Which,
by the way,
that was, you know.
I wish Phil Mickelson would win one more.
That's
before
another guy.
He's done. Because Tiger may be a fan favorite, but Phil Mickelson's just awesome.
Yeah.
He posts that video before the third round, talks a little trash about his partner there, Matt Kuchar. And it was very funny. And, you know, he had that highly frowned upon episode where he stopped a ball from rolling away with his putter.
I still think that was awesome.
I think that was awesome because it was so relatable.
Yeah.
Like,
it is very relatable.
Like, if you're out with your buddies on the golf course and you see that thing rolling away and you're just like, nope. Whatever, I'm going to just take an eight.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's end this. Let's end this miserable hole. So, no, I just, like, Phil Mickelson is, like, Tiger Woods, it seems like, is the people's champion. But Phil Mickelson is the relatable people's champion.
I can get behind that.
I think Phil Mickelson's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So while everyone was in peak Tiger mode, I was not, admittedly. Sadly, I was also watching some of the worst hockey of the day yesterday. I was watching Pittsburgh just look kind of uninspired against the Islanders. They about to get swept. Then I watched Tampa Bay and Columbus, and man, I got some things I gotta check myself on here. Tampa, Columbus.
Man.
All right, Frank, you ready? Are you ready to hear the words that you've wanted me to say probably since February?
Let me hear it.
Maybe they were right in not trading Bobrovsky and Panarin. Maybe they were right in keeping all of their players. Maybe they were right about going all in on the deadline. Because they actually look like a hockey team that cares about winning a first playoff series in franchise history. They look like the far and away better team than a 62-win Tampa Bay Lightning. What the hell is going on there? This is the choke job to end all choke jobs.
Yeah.
Remember how I said somebody's getting fired in this series? Because if it was Columbus losing, it was Kekalainen for going all in and not getting the result. If Tampa gets swept here, are there questions about John Cooper?
You have to think so.
The pressure was on this man before the series started, because it was not about what you did in the regular season with this team. It was always about what time you ended up choking in the playoffs. You know that meme? The guy points to his head. Mm-hmm. Can't choke in the conference finals if you don't make it there. That's Tampa Bay right now. Holy crap. This team is terrible right now. They are the best team in the NHL. 62 wins. They've lost 20 times in the calendar year. And now they've lost 3 times in a row.
Yeah.
For the first time in the calendar year.
The first time.
This is the first
time. You picked a really dumb time to look worse than your excellent selves. I'm pretty sure. I'm still fairly certain that 80% of people that pick brackets for like the NHL playoff challenge picked Tampa Bay.
Yeah. We all did.
And guess what? They might not make it out of the They probably won't.
No.
I will never say that nothing is impossible.
It's the NHL playoffs. Anything can happen.
But at the same time, 3-0? It's a pretty damning statement.
Yeah.
And it's a damning statement on John Cooper. If they get swept, remember, Steve Yzerman's not there anymore.
It's Breezeball.
It's Breezeball. Breezeball was on the staff when they hired him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
But he didn't hire him.
No, that was an Yzerman hire. Now, and Tampa does have an assistant who may very, who they may very well could promote to be the head coach, like what Washington did with
Reardon.
Todd Reardon when Barry Trotz left and Todd Richards.
Like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
If they get swept,
it wouldn't shock anyone if they do fire Cooper as a result. I'm not going to openly say that they will fire him if they do get swept.
But it wouldn't be a stunning thing.
But it would, yeah, it wouldn't be
and
stunning.
And people can look at that and go, Mom, yeah, okay.
You kind of messed up there, bud.
No, that's not kind of. They've really messed up.
This is
not a time, like, you don't have to hold back exaggerations. The Tampa Bay freaking Lightning are about to get swept by Dumbass. A team that has never won a playoff series in its franchise history.
They've never won 3 games in a series. This is the first time they've won 3 playoff games in 1 year.
Oh, my God, if they choke.
Are you serious?
Yes.
They've never even forced the game 7?
No.
No.
They've always been 4-2.
It's always been 4-2, 4-1, or they got swept.
Yeah. At best for the Columbus Blue Jackets, it's been 4-2.
It's been, yep, 2 wins.
Like last year. When they took both games in Washington and then never saw the light of day since.
2014, they lost Pittsburgh in 6.
Yep.
Those are the only 2 times that they've won 2 games.
And now they've won 3.
Yeah.
And Matt Duchene is looking every bit the piece that he was supposed to.
Yeah.
Ottawa fans are looking like, the hell?
I don't think they're looking at the hell. They're looking at
No.
Ooh, we're getting more picks.
Well, yeah, but at the same time,
because he was doing that in Ottawa, he was a point in game player.
Yeah, but at the same time, you would have liked to see.
He had a really good year. He had a really good year.
Well, his acquisition year was not that good. You know, where they traded their first round pick.
And wow.
It's now the 4th overall selection. Which, by the way, good for the Sens that it didn't get worse.
Yeah.
That Colorado didn't land Jack Hughes or Capocacco.
Boy, think about this for Colorado. 2 times now in the past 3 years, they've had the best odds at selecting first, and they've selected fourth.
And Sabres fans complain about getting jobbed in the lottery.
Yeah.
And right. Jersey's been the one that's won the lottery both times.
Yep. And Jersey won the lottery both those years.
Taylor Hall.
Yep. It's Lotto Taylor Ball Hall effect.
Taylor Hall, Lotto Ball legend.
Yeah.
And then when he's not getting Lotto balls, he's winning an MVP award with the Devils.
Yeah.
It's all or nothing with this man, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
But no, back to Tampa Bay on all this, though. It's just really embarrassing to see. I mean, Nikita Kucherov gets angry, deliberately boards someone in game two, gets a suspension for it.
Yep.
And the first thing that I say about it is, oh, they're not going to miss him because Kucherov doesn't show up in the playoffs.
Well, don't worry. They're just doing what Kucherov does.
Stamkos, again, still has not
produced. Follow the leader, apparently.
Yeah. Stamkos, again, is not producing.
Yep.
They finally got a goal from someone on the second line with Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat and Braden Point centering that line.
Yep.
This is embarrassing to see. You had one of the best rosters in the entire NHL. You had
best rosters in NHL history.
You tied the record for wins in a season.
Like, this is probably the best roster a team has ever put together because of the fact that they had a cap ceiling that they had to work with. They tied Detroit in 96, who had 62 wins. They didn't have to worry about a cap ceiling. They could spend as much money as they want. And that was the same thing with Montreal back in the 70s. They could spend as much money as they want. Montreal at that time could also get all the best players because of a French-Canadian thing.
Right.
So they had a limit, and they had 62 wins. Like, that is impressive to do.
They also didn't have ties.
That, I'm talking being able to have that kind of a season and be limited to how much you can spend.
Again, it's still just really embarrassing what's going on with the Tampa Bay Lightning here.
And just to get swept out of the playoffs. Like, yeah, it is complete and utter embarrassment. It is a complete and utter choke job. And something's got to happen.
Now, say they make a series of this, but then they eventually fall. I don't think people get fired for that. But I do think a statement has to be made.
You might have to, though, because of the fact that even if they win, like, two games and then lose in game six.
I'm not saying someone gets fired. I'm saying someone gets traded. You can make a statement by moving a player.
If they get swept, it's probably both.
It's like the St. Louis Blues. They moved several players because there was just constant playoff failure. They weren't getting anywhere. And what happened? Well, TJ Oshie won his first cup. It just really becomes one of these things where teams make moves to try to shake things up because they're not getting any further than they still do. Here in Buffalo, it's, oh, hey, we're finishing in last place. We need to do something about this.
Yeah.
But there are teams where it's, oh, hey, we're not getting past the second round. We need to do something about this. And right now, the Tampa Bay Lightning embarrassingly are showing, hey, we can't make it to the Stanley Cup. We need to do something about this.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous to see how often Steven Stamkos disappears in the playoffs. And you know what? Here's the biggest thing about it all. I'm loving all of this. Tampa Bay, low-key, is a fairly dickish team.
Yeah.
Anytime you see a Sabres game, something happens that is blatantly dirty, and it's like it's Stamkos of all people starting something, or it's something ridiculous like that.
I know you weren't a fan of Cedric Paquette this year.
No, the Sabres Cedric Paquette. I'm glad if they get swept. I hope it's because I hope they get swept just because I can be like, take that, Cedric Paquette, the little French version of Brad Marchand, jackass. But Steven Stamkos is no better half the freaking time. Nikita Kucherov blatantly bored someone just because he's not doing well. He's pissed off. Which brings me to the next thing that I want to talk about with these playoffs. Kucherov was one of three now players that have had a review-worthy hit
Yeah.
That are notable top six players in a lineup. Kadri's on the second line, but let's not divert ourselves from the main topic here. He could be a top six player on a lot of teams.
He would be a top, yeah, most teams.
Most teams don't have Tavares and Matthews down the middle. This is the third time now, with Joe Thornton now getting a hearing with the Department of Player Safety for a head hit, that we are seeing some dumb hits from skilled players because playoff hockey. And they need to police themselves because refs aren't going to call penalties. You know what, Stripes? Maybe you should actually do your friggin' job before someone gets murdered. Because the Kadri hit, cross check to the head, dumb.
Yeah.
Super dumb. You want to know how that doesn't happen? Call some penalties. Make things happen so that the players don't have to police themselves or feel that they should police themselves. Because what's he do? He goes after DeBrusque, who hit him in a knee-on-knee contact hit. It wasn't as intentional as that cross-check to the head was, but maybe if you call some things, players calm down so that they don't sit in the box and become a liability. Or, better yet, get their ass ejected. Kucherov's hit? There was 4 minutes left in a 5-1 whitewash. That's just... You should have got more than one game for that intent.
That's just taking advantage of a situation is what it is.
Yeah. You should have got more than one game for that. Kadri, you cross-check someone in the face. Have we gotten a suspension ruling on that, by the way?
He is, I believe he only got suspended for game 3.
Oh, my playoff hockey. It's the playoffs. They swallow the whistles. No, they shouldn't. They should still do their job.
Kadri's in-person hearing is being held this afternoon.
Oh, it's in-person. He's getting 5. Oh, he is done for the series.
It sounds like he took it, too. Based off NHL Player Safety's tweets, he has been offered an in-person hearing, and the next tweet was that it's going to go down that way.
Well, I mean, it's you got to accept it. Otherwise, they're just gonna hit you anyway. You know, if you decline it, you're just pretty much saying, well, do your worst. What he's going to do is explain his side of the story and try to reduce it so that in case the Leafs do advance around, he can be back. But I do believe in-person hearings generally lead to 5+. Phone interviews are generally 1-4. In-person means 5+. Because he has a suspension history. He did it literally a year ago with Tommy Wingles, of all people. Because that's the guy you need to take out. It's Tommy Wingles. He's such a problem. And then we see Joe Thornton do it to Thomas Nozick last night.
That was nasty.
That was a nasty hit.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Thornton, all 6'4 of him, decides he needs to elevate and reposition his body to hit the head of somebody.
Yeah, that was quite the drive-by behind the net.
Yeah. And they called it for head contact, and I noticed, I'm like, he's gonna have a phone hearing for that, because they called head contact.
Yep.
That was the penalty. Maybe if the referees do their actual job a little more consistently, these dumb plays don't happen. Because guess what? They don't happen as often in the regular season with notable players. No, it's only the idiots usually that, your usual suspects. Or you get the bad hit on circumstance more so than intent. Like how Connor McDavid got suspended or Jack Eichel got suspended. You're looking at plays where it wasn't necessarily intent, but it was head contact, and you had control of your body. You just... Things happened. Or like, for example, the Rasmus Ristolainen suspension from a couple of years back. A check is made of the puck by Samuels Girgensons.
Right.
And Jake Guentzel gets blasted.
Right.
For
can I read,
definite interference.
Can I read a couple tweets from... At Down Goes Brown on Twitter.
Okay.
Have seen a few explanations of the shocking Jackets Lightning series that focus on the playoffs being a different game, refs putting whistles away, it's big kid hockey now, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, that certainly plays a role in many postseason upsets, but here's the thing. The Lightning were second in the NHL in penalties this year. The Blue Jackets were second last. Lightning were top 10 in hits. Blue Jackets in bottom 10. The narrative is that a big, tough team is taking advantage of small, skilled ones really doesn't work. So what is happening with Columbus, with the Columbus-Tampa series right now? Well, Bobrovsky's outplaying Vasilevsky. That's number one.
Playoff Bob has not shown up.
No.
Regular Bob is still here.
Bob, Bobrovsky is on the case. He is still here.
He has got his badge and gun.
Yeah. That's the big one right now. Vasilevsky's not playing well.
All right.
Columbus is just plain old outplaying Tampa.
So here's the other thing, though. The other major takeaway about the NHL playoffs that is kind of like my main thing here, and it's this. The West has been so much more dramatic. We have one series in the East, Toronto-Boston, where there's not a sweep danger going on. If Washington wins tonight against Carolina, that's three series of 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
Yawn. What have we got out West?
Dude. Madness.
St. Louis, yeah, Winnipeg madness. Is a fantastic series.
Yeah.
I am loving every second of that one. And I was very happy to see the Blues finally lose a game in game three there last night. But you saw great plays from Winnipeg in that one. Like Dustin Byfuglien, tight, short angle shot over the shoulder of Binnington. What? Are you kidding me?
He put that off his head.
Yeah. Like, that's a tight shot.
Yeah.
That's
He's
going
behind
around
the goal line.
It's going around the boards if he misses.
Yeah.
St. Louis scores again. Winnipeg restores their 2-goal lead. Like,
St. Louis scores again. It's like, yeah, it's back. All the series out West right now is all back and forth. You really don't know.
Dallas and Nashville split the first two. Colorado-Calgary split the first two. Like,
and now Colorado game three is going to play Cale Makar. That's a boost right there.
That's a boost, and also pretty sure Phil Housley somewhere just had milk come snot, like just shot out of his nose after he read that. Like, you're playing a rookie, what? You're not putting him in the press box right away? All right. We got to get going. I did it with this Columbus team. Are there any amended takes from the playoffs that you've got?
Because
I also have to eat crow on Pittsburgh real quick. Wow. The Islanders look legit.
I did say Bobrovsky would steal the Jackets one game. So that needs...
I said he was going to steal them, too.
...to be addressed.
Congrats, they've beaten all of us combined.
Yeah. I had Pittsburgh putting up some kind of fight, which I think they still could. But that series getting to six will be difficult, to say the least, by my prediction. Other than that...
Boston-Toronto seems to be going exactly how we expected it
to.
Washington, Carolina, let's be honest, it's going kind of how we expected it to as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Hurricanes are giving them troubles. They're just not putting a W up.
Yeah, and you got to think they're going to.
They're going to get some.
They're going to get.
Hockey returns to Raleigh tonight.
Playoff.
Did you see
hockey.
Their video?
Congrats.
For the love of God, come to our games.
Great reference.
So, that'll be interesting to see what happens there with those bunch of jerks. But especially if they win, I want to see if there is a playoff storm surge or not.
Oh, there will be.
Justin Williams hinted that there could be.
There will be. They have to win first.
They have to win first. So, we'll see. Should be fun.
Yeah.
I'm watching hockey tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. And then, obviously, the college championships this past weekend. Minnesota Duluth takes it. Kind of dominated throughout the entire tournament. It's a little sad that the championship game didn't get the tight game that fans deserved. Only 13,000 of them.
46,853 of us. SpongeBob reference. Pretty patties.
I get it.
We want our money back.
We want our money back.
Hey, where'd he go?
So, By the way, just real quick on that. I don't know what's going on.
The SpongeBob thing? Or?
I don't know. With the attendance at major hockey events here in Buffalo, there is a common connection. I don't want to call anything out without knowing things here. But at the same time, I do want to call things out without knowing everything. There's a common connection here with the World Juniors from a couple years, and now this past year with Frozen Four. People aren't showing up. Tickets are too high. People aren't willing to spend this kind of money on players that they do not know. Maybe guys here in Buffalo, I feel like they have a say in the ticket prices.
Yeah, but it's the NCAA.
And was it also the IIHF?
That one we don't know.
What I'm saying is there's a common theme. It could have been the NCAA.
No, it was the NCAA who did set the ticket prices for what they are, for what they were.
But I would imagine conversations were had about the facilities here in Buffalo.
Probably. And maybe part of the attendance is because of the arena itself.
Ticket prices are too high. There's a consistent factor here. And like I said, I don't want to necessarily call anyone out here without knowing the full truth. What I also do know is that for the last 2 years now in Buffalo, we've had major hockey events here,
mm-hmm.
promising good attendance, and the ticket prices were too high. The common theme is that they were at KeyBank Center. Maybe some folks downtown need to figure some things out.
It's about time that place got upgraded.
It's not even that. People go to the arena, no problem. But to watch players that they do not know for a reasonable price. Don't jack up the prices to where people will not go to the World Juniors and the Frozen Four within the same two-year span. This is ridiculous. People downtown, you better figure it out. Otherwise, we're not going to get these events on a consistent basis, and who do we have to blame at that point? It's not going to be me. It's not going to be the fans that actually bought the tickets. It's not going to be the fans that went ahead and said, I don't want to pay $240 for three games of a bunch of people I don't know in the 300 section.
I'm curious as to what ticket prices are for other years and at other places and see where if there's a connection there.
Yes, like I said, there is a consistent factor here. I do want to look into it, and it's very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, guys. You ready to talk draft?
I am ready.
All right. Well, let's do it. Joining us now on the Leftovers podcast, our man Jeff Lloyd, Locked On Browns, and a draft aficionado like many of us out there, but just a little more hardcore like that. So that's why we ask him some of the tougher questions here. Jeff, it's Derek, Kyle. It's been a bit of a time, man. What's good?
Nothing, got through, basically the busyness of draft season. You know, here we are, obviously, about 10 days away here. Well, maybe not for my Browns, but about 10 days away here before round one kicks off. It's going to be interesting how it goes down. I mean, with the quarterbacks playing all this, obviously, defensive or heavy, whether it's, D-line and edge guys, it's going to be interesting how it all goes down. It's, every class is unique in its own way. This year, not so much maybe on the running back wise, but other positions. The wide receiver class is maybe not top heavy, but there's a bunch of good guys. It's a deep group there. Every class always brings its flavor.
Every class brings its flavor. But you said there's nothing new going on, Jeff, but the Browns have all this hype. They are suddenly a betting favorite. And I don't think I've talked to you since things went down.
A couple things have been happening. Obviously it started with, the Kevin Zeitler, Olivier Vernon deal. The Browns made an emphasis that they were going to get better and deeper on the defensive line after playing Myles Garrett and Larry Ogunjobi into the ground last season, basically giving them the least amount of breathers of any two defensive linemen in the entire league. Zeitler was one of the highest paid guards in the league. He deserved it. I mean, he was that good. They just decided, with Austin Corbett, who was a second round pick for them at 18, it was time to get him on the field, shift some money. So basically now you're paying your right guard and you're paying your defensive end even less than you were paying your right guard last year. Then you go and find a way to get a guy like Sheldon Richardson into the fold. As long as Sheldon Richardson's head is on straight, which it appears, you know, it's been the case here the past couple of years. Just fantastic guy. You know, obviously you put on the interior defensive line. Also has experience, you know, with a hand in the dirt, the end. Also has experience as edge, so you can mix up looks with him. Obviously, you know, everybody wants to have that flexibility, maneuverability with their defensive line. And then there was the big one. And it was actually kind of funny because we were actually recording and we were mentioning, we were about 7 minutes into it, talking about Sheldon Richardson, you know, and this and that. And then the news broke as we're thumbing through Twitter. And we were trying to find a way to corp it into the show for live reaction. And I was just like, who are we kidding? We got to scrap this. And we got to start from the beginning. But it's just kind of the way it broke down. And you know, I was very vocal. Look, I didn't think Odell was realistic. I didn't think, I figured the New York Giants were going to want two first-round selections. The Giants viewed Jabril Peppers as a first-round selection. That was enough where the Browns were like, all right, yeah, let's pull the trigger here. So you go ahead, you get that deal done. I mean, you bring in someone as dynamic as Odell for, you know, pick 96, obviously pick 17 and Jabril Peppers. The defense they're going to run this year is going to be a little differentiated where Jabril Peppers maybe wouldn't have been as important as he was, you know, last year under Greg Williams. But you get Baker, the ultimate guy. Now you really can't double anybody. You know, as far as coverage wise, you can't double Odell, even though he requires it. You know, Jarvis Landry runs great routes. David Njoku, I mean, you almost got to put two guys on him anyway because it's rare that you got 6'5" guys running, you know, 4.4s, which David Njoku brings you. I don't know how you're going to stack the box for Nick Chubb with all these weapons you have on the outside, but with, you know, Odell getting a ton of one-on-ones, the precise route runner he is. Where Baker is so inept in getting the ball out at the correct spot and getting the receiver at the right point, you know, even to the point where he knows, you know, on this route, this guy likes it high, this route, this guy likes it in his numbers, the accuracy and with which he does it, it's just going to be insane, Derek. It really, really is.
Jeff Lloyd, Locked On Browns, joining us here on the Leftovers podcast. And, you know, I had to open up with the hype on Cleveland here because they're one of the more interesting teams now, and when you're looking at the schedule now, like, we as Bills fans are thinking, okay, this is the year where they've made enough moves where we expect them to make a push. Suddenly, it's Cleveland that is a team to look out for now instead of it being the usual Pittsburgh or Baltimore at the top of the AFC North. Now you have to factor in Cleveland. So Cleveland's an interesting team here, but on the other side of everything that happened with the Odell Beckham trade, Dave Gettleman continues to bewilder everybody at this point. And I can tell you're laughing because it's true. Whatever Dave Gettleman is drinking, I mean, I don't think wobbly pops before making trades is a good idea. And he is kind of exercising that right now, it seems, with how things are going with the Giants. And New York has now two first-round picks in this first round. They're probably the ultimate wild card, wouldn't you think?
You'd say that, but then that would also require the New York Giants, you know, and this is where Dave Gettleman was the perfect fit, because a team that doesn't want to embrace change and embrace this new era, you go out and you hire Dave Gettleman, who's in the same boat, obviously. They could absolutely be a wild card. Are they outside of the box enough to do that? I'm not really sure. I mean, for me, this screams so blueprint. It screams D end at 6 or quarterback at 6 or quarterback at 17 or D end at 17. It's just, you know, I don't, they're so caught between the fact that they think they are a contending now team after drafting second last year, now going to draft six this year. They still think maybe Eli can do something or maybe get them to the playoffs, where Philly's just getting better. While obviously, you know, Dallas obviously, you know, met, you know, to the playoffs last year. Washington looks like the most probable place where Josh Rosen may end up. But, you know, here are the Giants, you know, trying to kick Eli Manning out there for, you know, a 36th season. And say, let's see where the chips fall where they may, even though, you know, you took, you know, as great as Barkley is, you know, Odell Beckham was the one that opened up the field for everything. So I think it'll be very vanilla. I don't expect it to be too exciting. I think there'll be a defensive lineman, and it'll most likely be Daniel Jones in some sort of scenario, because hey, anytime you got Manning roots, you know, you got to stick with it.
Now, that's the thing. Like, I don't know why, Jeff, but I have this suspicion that the Giants could go ahead and just pass on a quarterback altogether this year, put all their chips on Eli this year, and that's where my wild card scenario with the Giants comes in.
I mean, sure. I mean, yeah, that would not surprise me one iota. Or they could say, you know, one of these kids in round three or four is fine. Look, I mean, the Giants have 12 selections. So if they do not draft a quarterback, somebody just needs to walk into that building and smack some people around just because of his age and just because of the fact that, look, I mean, you need somebody, you know, at least somebody else to maybe take some reps or, you know, got, you know, Eli at his age, whatever. You need something, or you can't start the season at 1-6 and say, well, we're going to play out the string with Eli and we'll address the quarterback position. You need some future, some hope at that position. But yeah, would they take 6 and 17 and say, well, go two defensive players? Cause you know, we've got Eli and a whole bunch of receivers that are really great, you know, 6 to 10 yards from the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Hey, it wouldn't stun me. Not in the least bit. No.
All right, Jeff. So now I want to move on to obviously the Bills. I mean, we're here in Buffalo, and one of the greatest things I think about this year's draft is the amount of directions Buffalo can go without seemingly being able to botch this at pick 9.
I'd agree.
Because there's mocks that you have it being T.J. Hockenson, or there's mock drafts that it's D.K. Metcalf, or they go offensive line, or Ed Oliver falls into their lap. Like, it seems like there's so many different ways that Buffalo can do this that it's almost like they're in an enviable position in the draft here. They're not. There's enough talent in what could be need positions for this team that they can hit on pretty much anything here.
I mean, well, first things first. I mean, which may not be the sexiest of all selections. Look, you obviously have a lot invested in Josh Allen, and you want to give every, you know, every scenario possible and every, you know, effort to making sure that works. So do you go out, you get the left tackle after spending money on free agent wide receivers? It's not the sexiest thing in the world at 9, but it may be the best thing for you to do. You know, sure, if there was a running back worthy of going 9 overall, would you consider it when, you know, you've kind of got like the Del Boca Vista of running back groups up in Buffalo? Yeah, I mean, that's something you'd probably consider. But there's just probably not a guy who's going to warrant that selection here. DK Metcalf is definitely interesting. The where DK excels, obviously, is big, long, vertical chunks down the field. You added some slot guys. You do have a couple of guys on their roster who can get deep. If you just wanted to give Josh that weapon, obviously, you know, DK Metcalf with Josh Allen is a nice, nice way to do it. Ed Oliver's the weirdest thing because, you started to see some questioning him, you know, before we got to the combine. And then he came in and he weighed great and he benched over 30 times, ran well. I don't know, you know, even if you wanted to start dropping Ed Oliver, I don't know how you can continue to do so. He dispelled every myth. Look, he's undersized, yeah, but he's undersized, but he's really strong. He's really athletic. His tape is freaking off the charts. He's a really, really good player. Look, if he's there at 9, yeah, I mean, Ed Oliver's one of those, I don't care what our plan was, Ed Oliver's available. He's that good. He's that legit. It's obviously going to, you know, it's going to create a bunch of havoc for, you know, whatever interior offensive line has to face him week in, week out. He's one where, you know, your board and your plan and how you value the overall strategy you're going to handle this draft. If Ed Oliver's there at 9, yeah, that it creates a good panic system where it's okay, but we really like this left tackle. Yes, but we had Ed Oliver as the third player in overall in this draft class. How can we turn down this value at 9? That's what Ed Oliver brings, and it's going to be tough. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely say, you know, realistically, if you're going to do it the safe, correct way, you're looking left tackle. DK Metcalf, I just don't know if I'm that high on him where I would take him at 9. But yeah, I mean, somebody else wants to go ahead and do it. You know, it's going to save some other teams maybe a possible headache down the line. But, you know, Ed Oliver would be the dream scenario, and Andre Dillard, even a Jonah Williams, either one of those guys there at 9, it's safe. But you want to know what? It's basically doubling up on the investment you put in Josh Allen last year.
Jeff, first off, if they take a tackle at pick 9, I'm more than cool with it. I'm one of those guys that's just gonna be like, nice. I'm here for that.
Yeah.
So
you got to.
Exactly. You got it. And especially if it's like the athletic Andre Dillard who can help get you out there and moving, and therefore screen passes can be called again for this offense. They'd be great. Oh my God.
Yep.
You know, that's one of those things here. Now you had mentioned earlier about when we were talking about the goofy Giants. You threw the name Daniel Jones there at pick 17, and I kind of physically cringed when you said that because I have a bet with the dopey Nate Geary at this station that only three quarterbacks go in the first round because I do not think Daniel Jones should have a first-round grade.
And,
oh, I agree.
Yeah, it just.
I agree.
And even I'm starting to think they can't 2011 this, right? Like the 2011 class, you had four quarterbacks go in there, and I mean, it was Cam Newton and everyone else. This year's draft class, it kind of sings to me the same thing, and I don't think that GMs are that stupid. Are they?
Well, I don't, do I want to use stupid or do I want to use desperate? I think desperate is more of the case. And look, your leash is only going to be so long. So, you know, so, all right, well, you know, we'll look at one of the, you know, the after first round quarterbacks or the second and third tier guys. Those guys most likely aren't going to get the opportunity fast enough where if you're a guy where your job is in limbo, it's going to save you. You know, would I take Dwayne Haskins in the first round? Yeah, I absolutely would. Would I take Kyler Murray in the first round? I absolutely would. After that, yeah, I agree. It's a little murky. You like good Drew Lock. Bad Drew Lock scares the living daylights out of you. Daniel Jones, no. I mean, there's no way I would touch him in the first round. But, you know, the Cutcliffe and the Mannings and the – I mean, he screams a New York Giant quarterback to the nine, regardless of what franchise it is. Yeah, I mean, if there's a franchise that's going to do it in round one or somebody who doesn't, you know, unless somebody trades up to, you know, 28, 29 or late in the first round and just say, we'll get the fifth-year option, we'll roll the dice. But if there's a team that's going to take him round one, it is the New York Giants. When there's smoke, there's fire.
I'm going to ask the Giants to give me my $20 that I have to give to Nate. That's not fair. So
yeah, they just have them throw a GoFundMe for you. They'll take care of it.
Yeah, look at that, Jeff Lloyd. He's not just our guest right now, but he's one of those good guys.
Man of the people.
So now, Jeff, obviously we're talking just about the first round here, and we're only scratching the surface. Obviously, it's one day of the draft, and you know, one of the coolest things about this draft is its depth. It's not a very top-heavy class, as you mentioned, with wide receivers, but there are receivers that you can get starters probably in the second, third round very easily. Tight end is looking like a fantastic-looking class. Defensive line is looking like a solid class here. What are your thoughts initially on the strengths of this class and how it can help teams like your Browns, our Bills, and even Kyle's Eagles?
Well, look, the Eagles... Kyle, congratulations. The Eagles just do business, and they just do business well. They're fun to watch right now. I mean, I admire the way they do it and the fact that, you know, they realize it's a window and they will do everything they can to, you know, manipulate that before Carson Wentz's agents walk in the door and say, okay, let's talk $160 million contracts. But the Eagles, honestly, maybe another running back. I don't know what the huge need really is for the Eagles. You know, maybe a wide receiver. But the Eagles are so well run right now that, you know, it's hard to find a glaring hole other than the fact of the glaring hole of, can we please get Carson Wentz for every game under center? Not that Nick Foles didn't do a bad job. The problem is Nick Foles ain't here no more. So, I mean, they were fine either way if Carson went down, but now it's going to be a drop-off after that. I think, you know, even on the interior D-line, the defensive tackle group, whether it's a Rennell Wren, whether it is a Michael Dogbay, Kalen Saunders, all of these guys who could go mid-third round and later, a guy like John Kaminsky, a young kid out of Ohio, went to college as a high school quarterback, now is damn near 300 pounds and kept most of his athleticism. Pass rushers, you know, Ja'Kai Polite, you know, had the worst draft season a guy can possibly have. But if you put him at 2018 tape, it's really, really, really good. So, I mean, was he just a kid, you know, who's a little lazy and just wants to get paid and go play ball? I mean, that's why, you know, you need to get inside the kid's head and, you know, is he broken from the experience? And now he realizes, you know, he's got to get back to work. Still a great player, so he'll probably still go somewhere in the top 100, no doubt about it, even with the bad workout numbers, as long as you watch the tape. I mean, he didn't, you know, no dirty tests, no off-field incidents where he's putting his hands on the wrong people, none of that stuff you have to worry about. So, you know, the edge group, it's got some teeth to it then. The safety class, I think the best part of the safety class is probably right after round one, where Darnell Savage comes into the mix, Juan Thornhill, Taylor Rapp. These guys are all a little bit different, but all really, really, really good. You know, the cornerback class, we're 10 days away, and, you know, I know my number one quarterback is Justin Lane out of Michigan State, but the guys we've been hearing about all the way up until now, Greedy Williams, the testing wasn't so great. We're to the point where Greedy Williams doesn't have it, hasn't had an official visit, which is just really, really weird. DeAndre Baker had a rough period through the meetings, didn't really test so great. Some people are saying, oh, he'd be a great nickel cornerback. Is that what you're going to take with the top 32 selection? That causes some hesitation. Byron Murphy, who should still go round one, he didn't run very well, but the rest of his tape is fantastic. He's still very athletic. Obviously, University of Washington has a history of that, where these guys come out and they're really, really good athletes. It's defensive side of the ball. I think if you've got picks on obviously late day two to early day three, you should be able to clean up and get some guys whether they're starting or not, but should fill into a role, whether it's 15 to 20 snaps a game right away, and give you a lot of energy and a lot of production.
Yeah, exactly. Like, seriously though, Jeff, this has been. I feel like though, with everything that's gone on with this, like you mentioned the Greedy Williams thing, that's one of the strangest stories I've seen in a while. No pre-draft visits. It's a very weird thing to really be taking into account there. I think I read that, what was it, with Rappaport's tweet, the first time since Tyler Eifert?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I mean, and sometimes you view it as, oh, wow, well, the guy is just that safe. We're not going to waste it. But it still seems really, really, really strange, unless the interviews went really well, obviously at the combine. But yeah, I mean, something seems weird there, and everybody just was a consensus of, oh, okay, here's the top 30 player, and we're good with it. But yeah, I mean, to, basically have a meal or two with a couple of teams, but not actually, get on a plane to go anywhere. It's definitely a weird, weird thing where Eifert, he was just that safe. Everyone viewed him and felt he was that good of a kid coming out of Notre Dame. Greedy Williams, he's come from a tough upbringing. There were days where, the house, it rains. His mom's got to go take all the pots and pans out of the cabinets, to catch all the rainwater coming through the ceiling. I mean, he grew up rough. So it just seems weird. Does he go round one? I think a place like Kansas City, they'd be all over it in a heartbeat. But it does seem strange that, a guy who was once considered the top cornerback in this class has not had one official visit.
Jeff Lloyd, Locked On Browns, joining us here on the Leftovers podcast. One last thing for you here, Jeff. I still really am in love with this wide receiver class, and even one of my favorites took a bit of a stock tumble at the combine in Riley Ridley, because no yep. Georgia players seemed to have tested well that day. But I think though that if the Bills don't go with a receiver at pick 9, I'm suspecting they're not done adding another receiver to this room, despite what they've done in free agency. And who are some of your favorites in the middle three rounds there, round 2, round 3, round 4, that should be targets for, say if you even wanted the Browns to take someone? Like, who are some of your top targets in those next three rounds at wide receiver?
I think Hakeem Butler just screams everything you want. The one thing you notice, though, drops are an issue, and he's actually one of these guys, and Pete Smith, who does, about 90% of the shows with me, we actually went back and we watched some Braylon Edwards. It was actually similar, Hakeem Butler to Braylon Edwards, where they, when they run, their head doesn't stay still. Their head kind of, bobs while they're running. So when they go shuttle down and you go to find the ball, I mean, you're not getting a clear view of it. Yeah, can you be broken of it? You can be broken of it. But, it is something that's going to lead to focus drops, and that's been a little bit of the issue with Hakeem Butler. But, I mean, there is not one cornerback in the NFL that can cover Hakeem Butler one-on-one. So that guy, I mean, he's just – the circus catches all of it. He's capable of it. If you're going to bring him down, you better bring a friend, because you yourself ain't going to get the job done. I love and still love Andy Isabella. You watch some of the tape, and it's like I use the term with him, like he's got that fast and furious speed where they hit like the nitro, and he's just got that extra gear, and he separates. And it's one thing where he's playing at UMass, and you say, oh, yeah. But it's a whole other thing when you're seeing him do it against Mississippi State. You're seeing him do it against Georgia, and you realize the type of player that this young man is. One guy here, I don't know where he's going to go. My guess is he's going to be late on day three. And he was a surprise to declare, because even talking with a couple of people at Wake Forest, they were stunned. Greg Dortch, look, he's tiny. He's 5'9 and change, 175 probably on a good day. But you watch him play, and he's got he's got a little Odell to his game. I mean, he can make the play. He can stop on a dime. In his run after catch ability, there's a lot of wiggle to him. He can get deep. He screams right into successful slot receiver. You don't want to say New England, because God, nobody ever wants to give them a toy. But a guy like Greg Dortch, I think there's a lot of untapped potential there. And I think he was just more of, you know, maybe he felt like he was tapped at Wake Forest, and maybe it was time to go out and, you know, search another avenue to do what was best for him. But Greg Dortch, you know, late in the middle of day three, is a guy I just absolutely love.
Yeah, that's the first time I've heard Greg Dortch. So that'd be a pretty interesting one there, especially with what they've done with the slot receiver position. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to be necessarily a Bills fit, but a name that, you know, is good to be hearing nonetheless. Jeff, you got any other observations with this draft that we haven't gone over?
Yeah, there should not be a running back taken round one. And the running back from Alabama, who everybody wants to have go round one, I would take the other running back before I'd pay the price for Jace Jack. I would take Damian Harris. Running back is just it's just a strange group this year. Next year, it looks beautiful. This year, though, I just don't see it. I don't buy that there's a first round running back in this group. Josh Jacobs, look, what you saw is great, but I mean, 500 career college touches, and we're just going to figure that he's going to go off next year and touch the ball 400 times. Because if you're drafting a running back round one, that's essentially what you're asking him to do. You look at what Saquon Barkley did last year, obviously taking a lot higher. But if you're going to spend the round one premium on a running back, you want to give him the ball 350 to 400 times. And I just don't know if you're going to get the return investment. I haven't seen enough of Josh Jacobs to do it. So, if it's take Josh Jacobs at 25 or take Damian Harris at, 59, I'll take Damian Harris.
All right. Jeff, tell the good people where to find your work.
Guys, obviously, we are on daily, the Locked On Browns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find us obviously on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, new one, Himalaya Podcasting app is a new one we partnered with. Obviously, the Twitter account, you can always just follow over there, Locked On Browns. We keep it a follow back account. We get a lot of great interaction over there. Me personally on Twitter, at Jeff_LJ_Lloyd. Always around, always talking ball, hoping the voice holds up here for the next 10 days before we can go into hibernation, hopefully for May 1st for a week or whatever.
Yeah, and be ready for smokescreen season. You know it's coming.
Oh, of course it is. Everybody's rising around, dropping around. The only one I'm waiting for is probably about next Monday, because that's usually when we get the leak of when, somebody showed up with a dirty piss test in Indianapolis for the combine. So that's basically the last domino to drop.
Jeff, thanks for taking the time, as always, my friend.
You got it, Derek. Anytime, buddy.
All right, man. That was Jeff Lloyd, Locked On Browns, and a draft guru of many that we talk to, but it's always good to hear from Jeff. He gives a certain fresh perspective and very, very nice notable quips along the way. That's kind of my style. I always like making fun of things as they were. So I didn't ask him about Tiger. That's on me, guys. Sorry about that. We're going to get going here on the Leftovers podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank Arcuri.
Kyle Powell.
And thanks to Jeff Lloyd from Locked On Browns joining us here today as well. 10 days from the draft. So we're going to get more on that. NHL playoffs continuing on here tonight, as they always do now with the first round. We might see another sweep danger going on there. And then, by Thursday, we'll find out just how dumb the Tampa Bay Lightning have ended up messing up things in their series, and just how much more am I going to have to apologize to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it is the refreshing!
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.